Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Each year, The Real Deal brings together hundreds of entrepreneurs, deal makers and investors at a packed venue in Goffs, County Kildare. It's not for fanfare, it's not for profit. Instead, it's to exchange ideas, to share experiences and to spark conversations that maybe might just lead to the next big business deal. So where did it come from? Why are we involved with it? And what are we expecting from this year's event? To discuss this, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Stuart Fitzgerald, who is the CEO of Fitzgerald Power, the accountancy firm, Mark Flood, co-founder of Vernatus Capital Partners, the Irish private equity house, and by June Butler, who's the head of corporate and SME banking with Bank of Ireland. You're all very welcome here to Beacon Studios today. June, I'm going to come to you in a couple of minutes and we'll talk about your new job with Bank of Ireland. But Stuart and Mark, the real deal, and I've been at it the last couple of years, it's fantastic. The energy, the buzz, the excitement and the insights are great. But this was came from kind of a conversation, a coffee or a pint maybe, I don't know, between the two of ye back closing in on 10 years ago.
Is it that long? 10 years ago?
Well, it must be. The first one was 2018.
It was, yeah, so we're getting close on it. It's, you know what, it's a unique event. It's just, I don't think we ever probably expected it to grab the imagination the way that it has. And it's become a real fixture in the calendar. It's something that we love doing. Your question is probably, where did it start?
Yeah.
I don't know where it started. Like, we were over and backing on, you know, is there an event that really speaks to the SME community in Ireland? There's lots of good events out there, but we thought there was room to do something unique. And we just...
Not to cut across you, Stuart. You're not event managers. You're not. I know you've loads of people who can do.
We are certainly not.
This wasn't... And as you said, I think at the start, and it's important to emphasise, it's a not-for-profit. Like, it's probably costing your company's money.
We underwrite it. So, we have great support from our sponsors, Bank of Ireland, as the headline sponsor. But we're not Fitzgerald Power underwrite the cost of it. So there's a material check every year. And you know what? Like, to your point about not being event organisers, we made so many mistakes in the early days and we learned so many lessons. And it's developed as things have gone on. But you know what? Goffs has been a crucial part of it. Like, the magic of the venue is just a big part of the magic.
And for anyone who hasn't been there, and I think they should go if their tickets still available, but it's where they sell the horses. It's a beautiful circular venue that kind of lends itself to discourse.
It's unique, isn't it? I mean, the amphitheatre is unique. When the event is about to kick off, the electricity in the room is unbelievable. The energy in the room is unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, it's taken on a life of its own.
Yeah, I think the Bank of Ireland are more than a sponsor from the very start. June was around the table, and also with Donald Duffy and Michael Lahoff, this was a concept. And
Hilary Coates.
Yes, Hilary's joining us, thankfully, this year. And they backed it. Pre-revenue, if you like. It was a concept, and it would have been a lot easier to say go and establish it and back it. So really, you know, I think the three of us are in it together alongside our other sponsors.
Oh, 100%.
But I thought, Mark, it was madness at the start.
So it was.
It was against everything that one expects. So at that time, 2018, you expect, you know, a multitude of speakers, people, panels, kind of excitement on and off. You've gone for a more refined model. And I'm going to come to the speakers in a moment, but it's 3, 4, 5 speakers. Matt Cooper interviews them, but there's a lot of time for people just to chat in the background. And I think that's what makes it different.
Yeah, I think we'd love to say there was a big strategic plan and it was there. But what we did say, there was a set of values from the outset, which was that this will be players want to hear from players. And that was, we were absolutely non-negotiable on that. And as much as we might like the sound of our own voices, we said, no, players, it's only founding entrepreneurs who have done a deal. that was the criteria. And it's been hard, like, to get that level of the caliber of speaker is very hard, and we've never ever compromised on that. And that's so the editorial quality of it is one of the main reasons. And there's purity to it, in the sense that people say, "Oh, this is a brand, and you could go big with this." And no, the minute you do that, it would actually be it wouldn't work, because the fact that nobody's trying to make money, it costs us all money, and there's absolute. It's much more BBC than Channel 4. There's no ads. You know?
Yeah,
yeah.
June,
and maybe just to come in on that, as the lad said, Bank of Ireland have been a long term partner of the Real Deal since 2018, and actually really proud to be a partner of the event. And maybe just to tell you why, we take our purpose of supporting SMEs and businesses in Ireland very seriously. And we see this event as very much aligned to that purpose. It brings 1,000 businesses into the room together with advisors. It's a brilliant way for businesses to get insights or, you know, learnings from other organisations in the room that they can take back to their own business. And it's just a wonderful way for us to support, I suppose, enabling businesses to thrive. So we're really delighted to be a partner of the organisation, and we see real value in it for businesses. So that's why we're involved.
Well, that's great. I should say you're new to the role. June, you've come from the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland.
That's right.
Back, I don't want to say reverse pivoted, but back into kind of commercial lending.
Yeah.
So you're seeing it now from a different perspective, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And the SBCI was just an amazing role. I suppose I was involved in business lending before I went to the SBCI. Then I went into the SBCI and I was looking at what businesses needed from a very different perspective, looking at how the public sector was working to support businesses and how we could help do that by accessing European support. So from a personal perspective, it was transformative, because it just gave me the opportunity to look at everything a little bit differently. And now I'm delighted to be able to bring that back to Bank of Ireland. Bank of Ireland's a big commercial organisation. You know, we've relationships with 270,000 of Ireland's SME and corporate businesses. So to be able to bring that back now and make sure that we are working hard to get funding and lots of other products actually out to businesses is, I feel very lucky to have this job.
I'll come back to that in a little while. I just want to focus on the Real Deal for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to move on to the wider economic, the M&A, the accountancy, the business outlook. The agenda for this year's event is actually quite startling. And I don't just say that because we're a commercial partner and we're the media partner. But some of the people that you've got are really interesting and have fascinating stories. So we've got Sean O'Connor, who's the co-founder, should I say, of Stat Sports. And, you know, if you've watched any Premier League match or anything like that, it's their implants on the back of people's jerseys to figure out where they're running, how much they're doing. It's an amazing business. We've got Anya Den, who co-founded Altify in Dublin in 2005, and it was sold for around $84 million, which is a massive exit. We've got Mickey O'Rourke, who was the founder of Setanta Sports and Premier Sports, and he's one of Ireland's most consequential media entrepreneurs. And then you've got Tommy Kelly, who perhaps, and I don't mind saying this because I've said it in front of him and I've wrote in an interview, has more disposable cash in his pocket than perhaps anybody else in the country, having sold eShopWorld, ESW, for more than $1 billion over a couple of tranches. So Tommy has done so well that he bought Shirley Fitzgerald as a play, as opposed to his future. So some of these people, all of them, really have stories to tell, Stuart.
They sure do. It's a stellar lineup. Like, Tommy's is a fascinating piece, isn't it? Because it's sort of the maturation of Ireland Inc. So it's the entrepreneurial story, the great exit, and now he's an equity player in the market supporting other businesses. But every single one of those stories, they're all different. They're all unique businesses, and the entrepreneurs behind them are exceptional. We have, like, Anya Den's session is all about SaaS. So the journey is as a SaaS entrepreneur all the way through to exit. Sean and Mickey in relation to M&A and sport. And then Tommy is our legend of business, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Tommy's story, like, son of a farmer himself, and a digital entrepreneur that hits those metrics you mentioned. Like, so it's got an Irish story. You know, more than last year, people hadn't heard of Jimmy Martin, who a farmer himself, and he blew the socks off the crowd with his story. And like Anya's story in SaaS, it's a new world. AI, she's going to have a unique perspective on where AI plays on in the world. When you see that there's winners, there's losers at the scaling SaaS, and Mickey's story is just phenomenal.
Well, I think, look, I'm in media, you know, I know Mickey, I've come across him over the years, but it's like the ebbs and the flows, like Setanta, huge success, massive failure, comeback, bigger comeback.
It's swashbuckling. It's a swashbuckling entrepreneur.
It's a great
story.
Phrase, yeah.
Isn't it? Like, it has
he,
it all.
Yeah, like, he, you know, beaming, you know, in his youth, beaming the All-Ireland finals into a hall in Kilburn probably reminds us of us trying to run the real deal on the very first outing, thinking, will the lights work? And he goes out there to go to take on Sky, and to effectively, he was right too early. And
that's a great point, actually. He was right too early.
He took on Sky. The amount he paid per match is a fraction of what's been paid now per match, and it just hit that financial crisis time where he had the perfect play and just was just right a little bit too early at the wrong time.
Yeah, but it's what's really interesting about his story is the comeback story.
Phenomenal.
Well, you need resilience, right? So like it's probably a classic case of, and what do you need to make it work? You need resilience, you need vision, to Mark's point, you need an element of naivety to actually go out and, you know, and then the confidence to deliver it. And I mean, that is a story that just has it all, doesn't it?
Well, if you look at what actually happened was he was beaming the Premier League matches to the UK, and that was the business that did not succeed. And what did he go on to do? He went beaming the Premier League matches to the rest of the world, and he's gone on to sell, and I'm going to be 90% right here, but he's gone on to sell Setanta Canada, Setanta Africa, Setanta, there was an Australian leg to the business, Eurasian part, where he sold the Ukrainian business 2 months before the war, and then he set up the Irish business again, sold it to Air, got it back, and Premier Sports in the UK. Then he went the other way to take international sports into the UK. It is one of the best media stories.
These are great stories, and you must see them all the time, Jean.
Yeah, and just actually listening to the lads, I think hearing those stories and what people hear on the day is really the essence of the real deal, because it showcases the very best of Irish businesses, that tenacity, that resilience. I mean, I think, Stuart, you used a term earlier on of a perma-crisis. Like, we've jumped from one crisis to the other, and through it all, Irish businesses have shown that passion and that resilience. And I think that's what people get to see on the day, and I'm lucky enough to get to see every day. So it's inspiring.
And you know what? June is so right. And there's probably two things that define any panellist that's spoken at The Real Deal. And Ian, you've been at the majority of the years. They're humble and they're honest. And what you get when you come to The Real Deal, and Mickey will be no different than the rest of the panellists, they're absolute honesty. And I think that's what people really come for, you know. They come to learn from the likes of these panellists, to see what they've done and to try to take something home to their own businesses.
Yeah, and maybe a bit of hope, because when you hear some of those stories and some of the maybe battles or ups and downs that entrepreneurs have gone through, they'll take that back and maybe it'll inspire some of them to keep going.
Absolutely, because it's not linear. You know, entrepreneurship is just not linear.
Yeah.
And it's great to hear from people who've been there and done it.
Yeah.
And Sean's story as well, it's just like, you know, Moneyball meets Wall Street. It's just, he's the one tracking all these players internationally. And the dare we have for this year's Real Deal is, given last year I saw Ian Kyo going around Goff's, I think he was on his 20th lap talking to entrepreneurs and going around. So we're hoping to put a Stats Sports tracker on Ian this year.
I wouldn't. I just want to say, I think 2 years ago, I think I sat down, before we move on to wider economic outlook, but I sat down, John Purdy was at the event, like an outstanding entrepreneur, but far more than that, a well-rounded gentleman. A nice person who helped everyone who he came across. He sadly passed away, and it'd be remiss of us, I think, not to mention him in this podcast.
100%. Like, first things first, John was an incredible entrepreneur, an incredible story, an incredible story of resilience, an incredible story of growing a couple of businesses that were just, you could have never predicted the level of success that he would have had. And when he sat in the chair at The Real Deal, I mean...
Sorry, with a boot on his, he had just broken his ankle or something and coming back from the Alps.
Fell down a side of a mountain. I can't remember which mountain it was, but I remember getting the call. He said, Mark, I'm in trouble. I'm in hospital. I've broken my leg, but don't worry. Whatever happens, I'll be there.
And he was.
And that's
he was
testament to the man.
And he was brilliant.
So I just wanted to mention him, just...
He's a class act.
It's well put. He was a class act.
Yeah. And a giver.
And very, very generous with his time.
Yeah.
I met him a couple of times just for a coffee and, you know, to share feedback on what was going on in the market, what businesses needed. For a man who was so busy, he was so kind and generous with his time. That's my abiding memory of him.
He was. He has so many mentees around town and you hear from so many people. And he was just so supportive. And he's a big loss to the business community in Ireland.
Yeah.
And the story, like the story he gave was like one that everybody could resonate with. You know, he explained how, you know, he went all in, he sacrificed his lifestyle for that decade when lifestyle is important and young kids, and that was a tough time. He explained that. He explained how in early financial crisis they were up the creek without a paddle. And he pivoted in to sell some potential software into Nama at the time that became Finergo, one of Ireland's unicorn, true unicorn success stories.
And a real one. Yeah, like,
real
lots of them bounce up and down, but this is
It wasn't a paper unicorn, it was a realised one. And then in his own business, Ergo, how he navigated the chapters to the point where he thought, this has outgrown me, no, I'll go once more. This has outgrown me, no, I'm going to step aside. And how he dealt with that when Paul McCann joined, and I still remember him saying, you know, I was shaving and I said, John Purdy, you are not CEO. You know, that was he dealt with that transition. And then also how he dealt with his next chapter, where he didn't need to be involved in the, we could name a dozen, and we know there was two or three dozen who he helped. He did not need to be involved in that. The buzz, he loved the game. And you could get it from John that he loved the game, and that's why he was involved. And look, it's
I just think it's worth reflecting upon him in this. Listen, I just want to move on slightly. So we've talked about The Real Deal. We obviously talked about John, and you know, we need to do that. But we might as well talk about some bigger issues. June, right? I read the papers. You read the papers. I write some of the papers. You don't, but. Like, depending on which way you look at it, there's amazing opportunities for SMEs and businesses out there, or it's a really tough time. What are you seeing? What's the outlook?
It's probably a bit of both, Ian. So look, Irish businesses have come, if you think back a couple of years from, say, Brexit was kind of I've been working with businesses for 10 years now. Brexit was the kind of first crisis we encountered. Jumped from that to COVID, then to the war in Ukraine, then to the tariff crisis. And I suppose what I've seen from working with and talking to business is they have dealt with increased costs. They have dealt with some unpredictability in interest rates. But they have built up pretty resilient businesses during that time. So they've been able to deal with a lot of those. Yes, some of them needed either some government support or some bank support, but they've managed to work through and in lots of cases, actually expand and grow and take advantage of some of the opportunities that came from those crises. If you look at some of the stats, businesses are well resourced. They've got strong balance sheets. Deposit levels are healthy. And I suppose the good thing about that is it presents opportunities for businesses to be able to take advantages of those opportunities when they come. So it's not easy. The outlook is a bit unpredictable still when you see what's going on in the Middle East. But businesses are well versed in how to navigate through this now.
Yeah, it's so confusing, I guess. There's lots of you look at the graphs and you say, oh, could we be at a peak? Of course we could. Like, the we've had the third war and the S&P goes to its highest. Like, how does that work? Yeah. So it is confusing at a kind of a Wall Street, from a Wall Street perspective. You look at the graphs and you say, this could be near the top. That could be countered by the whole, is AI driven? You look at the Main Street version and how people... how we can live. We all see it ourselves with our grocery bills and all our other bills. It's just so hard. How is everything sustainable in that light? And then we look through our portfolio companies. We've invested in 13. We've realized 3. We've 10 live, and life is pretty good through those lens. So it's you feel like
well, actually, sorry, just not to cut across you there, Mark, but I mean, Renatus is well known, not just because of the investment you made, but you do a brilliant weekly email that goes out about all of the deals, the M&A trackers, and we try and associate with you on a quarterly basis and try and talk about what's going on. And when you look through that data, there's so much uncertainty, tariffs, everything else, Trump, war, inflation. I could go on. But Irish M&A seems to be surging ahead, or at least not going down. But it's like that deal flow is solid.
Oh, it's huge! Like when we started the email, we probably pivoted to doing the M&A tracker part. We said, look, is there going to be enough deals? Like, are we going to have a couple of deals to write every week, in a sense? And we averaged last year an average of 10 a week, 500 deals. It's phenomenal. And this year's looking higher so far based on Q1. So, like, we're, you know, there's 500 deals. And obviously, we're probably reporting on 80% of what happens. Some stuff happens.
Some stuff. Like, it's not going to the CCPC. It's not being registered. But deals, it's not...
Yes, look, there's a lot of trends there. There's a lot of cash-rich balance sheets internationally that need to work their capital. And in order to work their capital, they drive the consolidation. So there is a lot of trade-backed, cash-hungry, cash-positive companies who want to acquire. And there's a huge consolidation. There's consolidation of when you walk down the high street, there's, you know, a lot has been consolidated and there's plenty to consolidate. But the, you know, the insurance brokers have been consolidated. The accountancy is beginning to consolidate en masse now as well. There is, we've got...
Well, hopefully someone will take on the media, buy us all out. But no, go ahead.
Yeah, so we do this mass consolidation going on as well, and there's a lot of cash. And I think as well, chapters of journeys, I think people are beginning to live a bit and decide to take some chips off and still stay in the business. But there's lots, like a lot of those deals would be partial exits where people monetize success, drive on in the business they are, and there's a lot of capital out there to allow that. So there's a big environment to, and what we see is banks are wide open for the type of deals that are there at multiples with cash flow positive businesses. So there's lots. I don't see it slowing down. It didn't slow down in COVID, slow down in spite of three wars, effectively. Like, it didn't slow down in Brexit, didn't, you know, it's continued to grow and grow, and we don't see it slowing down.
And nor do we. And I think Mark's point on the banks, I mean, the banks are very supportive. The deal makes sense. You know, the lending is there. I think to take up a couple of Mark's points there, there's a diversity to capital that's available in the market now. I mean, you mentioned Tommy Kelly at the top of the podcast, right? So you have people who have had material liquidity events.
Family offices,
mm-hmm. Exactly. You have diversity in the lending market. You know, there's private credit. There's been a lot of talk about that, but there's lots of different sources, and I think that's brought sophistication. There's a huge amount of private equity. And I think what you tend to see, any advisor you see around town will tell you that a lot of the activity is being driven by international either equity firms or international trade players who have an interest in the Irish market for different reasons. And all of that seems to be just driving... what is, to be fair, a monumental level of activity, right? And across multiple sectors, from, you know, adjacencies to data centres to professional services, and up and down the country, there are lots of deals being done. But you know something else, Ian, right? they, I think, in fairness to platforms like Renatus, what those businesses have brought, because this is a business as well, what they brought to all of us who are running SMEs is probably a greater degree of sophistication and a greater degree of robustness. So, for example, right, your company, I mean, you have a board, you have a chairman, you know, you're held to account and all the rest of it. You know, you go back 10 years, we're the same, and we took capital in. You go back 10 years, were we running our businesses with the degree of sophistication that SME owners are now? No. And is that in part driven by the sophistication of capital providers in the market? In my view, yes.
That's a good point. It's a good point, Mark. And I'm going to come to you, Jean, in a second, but that's an interesting point that Stuart raises, Mark, about that. You know, the motivation of businesses to professionalise their operations, as opposed to, it's very easy for SMEs to get caught up in the weeds. So you're in there every day. OK, your finance director's off sick or on holidays, you have to do that. Your logistics person is off sick or on holidays, you have to do that. But by bringing in this sort of institutional capital, forces people to think about the big picture of where the business is going and where to drive it forward.
There's no doubt, but I don't think it's confined to private equity, as you said. Like we know some of the players on your board, there's some really successful, sophisticated, intelligent business people, likewise on Stuart's own board, and we bring a lot, our own investors. We've a lot of self-made entrepreneurs in our investor base. They help us, and they come, and if even not on the board, to give counsel through. And but what I would say is that if you consolidate the those who are giving counsel, we are some brilliant country, and there's excellent entrepreneurs. And
generous with their time.
They want to give back, and like we have, we are possibly one of the best countries in the world per capita for self-made entrepreneurs who are givers. And look at the John Purdy epitomised that more than anybody, Lord of Mercy, as we spoke. But we are givers. So like there's such a, I think that gets missed in the Ireland Inc. offering, but we've got some serious
people. And that's the point, I think, Mark. Far too often we look upon Ireland as this country of FDI and foreign direct investment and multinationals and all this stuff, but there is that well, June, and you're dealing with them day in, day out, of indigenous Irish businesses who are the backbone of the economy. In places like Stuart's from Waterford, I'm from Enniscorthy.
Economic hotspots.
Well, actually, Enniscorthy has an unemployment rate of 32%, right? But the point is, there are entrepreneurs there. People like Sam McCauley, who built big businesses out of that area, and Dermot O'Shea, and he's done great stuff with Tailgas. But it's not just FDI.
No, it's not just FDI. And maybe just to pick up a couple of those points, like where businesses have the opportunity to either bring in some professional advice or put a board in place, I've seen that add to businesses in a couple of ways. One, it gives a very different perspective. So you get a different view in from either experienced entrepreneurs who are giving their time, or you get some help putting the right processes and governance in place to help grow your business. And absolutely echo the point about how generous and giving Irish entrepreneurs are to other Irish entrepreneurs. It's a real community of people who want to support others. But I just want to come back in for a minute on your original question about M&A activity. So despite, you know, walking through all of those crises since Brexit, there actually hasn't been that much of a slowdown in M&A activity. We're still seeing an awful lot of deals coming to us, which we're delighted to see. Like, just to give some context to that, we put out about $500 million in M&A finance just in the last 12 months alone. So that activity is continuing. You know, if the market does soften a little bit over the next 12 months, if valuations change slightly, there's also lots of capital out there and businesses looking for good deals and good value to come their way. So right now we're not seeing any slowdown or any immediate threat.
You know what I find fascinating about June's perspective there, and reading Mark's newsletter every weekend, and what I see in the currency, is the, you know, up and down the length of this country, there's brilliant businesses regional businesses that you'd never heard of before that are just doing an amazing job, right? And you suddenly pick up the newsletter, Mark's newsletter, and you hear about this business that, I don't know, is doing something with data centers or whatever the case may be. And you're just actually, you sit back sometimes and just appreciate, to Mark's point, just how good and how strong the SME market in Ireland is at the moment. And it's actually really good to see.
Yeah, and just to come back in on that, what the M&A activity actually is driving is further opportunities. So where we're seeing that consolidation that you referred to, Mark, or, you know, businesses joining together, they're creating amazing growth platforms that actually are turning them into bigger businesses who start to export. So the reason I'm so passionate about this sector is, like when you see the impact of that in
the
community,
you're smiling at me.
It's brilliant. It's because, like, you can see the impact they have in their local communities, be that Waterford or Offaly in my case, or Enniscorthy. You know, they're contributing back to those communities. They're creating employment. They're contributing to Ireland Inc.'s revenue base. So their success has an impact on everybody. So to be able to, I suppose, contribute to that in some, you know, small way is just, it's brilliant.
And part of the impact they're having is it breeds confidence, right?
Yes.
So, like, you see someone in your local community and they're relatable and they build a big business and you can look at them and it's tangible, you can touch it and feel it. And I think there's a huge confidence. I think there's a huge confidence in SME Ireland right now. And the confidence is coming from seeing people like Mickey O'Rourke, seeing people like John Purdy out there doing it, you know, and you look at it and you think, yeah, well, maybe I could do it as well.
Just conscious of time. And we can chat all day about, you know, Ireland Inc., Indigenous Ireland Inc. So the real deal is coming up on the 6th of May. What can people expect? What if they're going to be turning up? Now, I don't want to give away too much, but in previous years, there has been ice cream. There's been ice. I don't know if it's coming this year. We'll see. But what can people expect from the speakers when they go into that room? And the adjacent rooms and the chats and all of that sort of stuff. So what are you hoping when they leave that event that they'll have left with?
It is an unrivaled learning experience if you're running a business. They can expect honesty from the people that are sitting on the stage and there will be insights to take back to your business that you will just not glean anywhere else. The other big thing for me that you get from coming to The Real Deal is it's an unrivaled networking opportunity. Like, there'll be 1,000 people plus there on the day. You've got SME owners, management teams up and down Ireland. You've got all the players in the market, like June's team in Bank of Ireland. And it's a great way to get to meet a network.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will come away with any less than four great things, and some will come away with a lot more. One, I think they will get one nugget from the wisdom of the stories.
But that can be profound. That one thing can be actually profound, Mark.
We met somebody who 6 months later said they were uncertain about doing something about a team member and about it was Aisling Taird's story, gave the confidence to restructure a certain team, and they did and felt, is this right? It gave them the conviction to do it. And the people around them said they met a few people subsequent to it happening saying they would have left it. That didn't happen. So it ended up, unfortunately, it was one person had to leave the business, but they claimed that five or six stayed on the back of that decision that came from that. So that's firstly is a nugget of wisdom from the stories from the stage. The second is meeting someone you forgot you didn't meet in recent times that you knew. Bumping into old friends.
But that's a big thing post-COVID. You know,
and LinkedIn's got too busy. You know, LinkedIn has got far too busy. So it's
well, we all play our role.
So it's you know, that's hit saturation, and nothing beats face to face. It's bumping into an old friend or an old acquaintance.
I even remember going to last year's event, and obviously we do interviews with your speakers, but I must have met five or six people at the event, Mark, who I ended up interviewing over the next 5-6 months.
Yeah,
good to hear.
And thirdly, meeting someone new. There's always, you know, there's we have a Helped by Claude, we have an algorithm for the pace of queues for food at lunch, which just kind of gets them fast enough to give you a quick bite, but slow enough to meet someone in the queue as well. So that's there.
That's a nice way of putting it, Mark. That's a nice way of putting it.
And fourth and final, you will...
I didn't see the Claude investment on the business case.
Fourth and final, you will get an ice cream, yeah. That's
very good. June?
Yeah, just to echo that... we will have a big team of relationship managers there on the day. I'm very lucky to work with brilliant colleagues who work in this sector, know it really well. So what I would say is take the, if you're thinking about funding, if you're thinking about finance, come and ask us, come and talk to us. We would be delighted to work with you. So those experts will be there in the room. And I just say to everyone who's attending, use that opportunity
well,
to ask.
I'm just throwing it out there again, but we see people like Sean O'Connor is co-founder of StatSports, Mickey O'Rourke, a legend in the media, and you know, entertainment industry, Áine Denn, SaaS expert, and Tommy Kelly, who's sold his business for more than $1 billion. They'll all be there. You
they
can
will.
All go listen and engage with them afterwards. I think that's one of the things that comes across, that you can sit down with these people afterwards and they're all willing of their time. So Stuart, Mark and June, I just want to thank you for coming into the studio here today. I really look forward to seeing you at the event.
Such a pleasure.
Thanks for all your support, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
You've been listening to the Currency.news podcast. It pays to be curious.